Welcome to Prophecy Girls, a Buffy rewatch podcast.
I'm Kara Babcock, pronouns she, her.
And I'm Stephanie Chow, pronouns she, her.
Join us each week as we break down every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
This is a spoiler-free podcast.
Whether you're watching for the first time
or longtime fans like us,
we'll be analyzing every episode, character, and storyline like it's our first time, too.
During this rewatch, we'll reminisce about our memories of Buffy,
discuss the show's cultural impact,
and provide honest commentary from a 21st century lens.
Thanks for listening.
Now, on to the episode.
Season 7, Episode 12, Potential.
This episode has the potential of going two ways, Kara. One way, you and I will, you know, recap it as our usual professional podcast host selves.
For the first time ever.
First time. We'll give it a shot. The other way is to admit right off the bat, as we usually do, that we're both actually very tired and... You know, we're actually starting this recording almost 2 hours later than when we usually record.
I've unlocked a new level of being tired while recording.
So we're already feeling like we've got the case of the fuck arounds. And like, this actually might be the best episode for us to just go.
I mean, unleash, my alternate title for this episode is Fuck Around and Find Out.
I think I named an episode in season 6 that, actually. My alternative title for this episode is Breaking Dawn, because
nice.
I just really wanted to tie in Twilight in there somehow. So anyway, the point is, it's quite late for us to be recording. We're going to be a little bit extra loopy, which I'm excited for, because usually that just creates a really fun editing experience for me. Later. Yeah, what did you think of the episode? What are your thoughts right off the bat, my friend?
I really liked this episode. I think that... Sorry, I have the hiccups. On top of being tired, I have the hiccups. And I'm trying hard to
keep
myself
cute.
In between hiccups. But
yeah, and I'm eating popcorn.
Steph's not going to edit any of this out.
No, if you guys hear a hiccup, yeah, Carl's got the hiccups. Deal with it. All right. That's what happens when you record 2 hours later.
We started literally before we started recording, like just as we were starting to chat. It was so annoying. Anyway, I really liked this episode. I think that the story that the episode is trying to tell is very important. I really enjoyed a lot of Buffy's scenes, what she says, what she does. Also, shout out to my boy Clem. Who's back?
I liked the episode too. At first, I was like, oh, this is not pacing as well as previous episodes in this season. But then I was like, you know what, though? Like, I like that the show is showing us that even though we have this expanding cast, because all of the potential Slayers are joining the Scoobies and living in the house, we're not going to be forgetting about our main characters, because this is a very Dawn-centric episode. It's easy to lose your main characters when you start expanding the cast this way. We've seen this happen before, and a little bit in this show, but like, you know, in other shows for sure. So far, I like that they have managed to still make it about the people that we love, and we are loving Donathan this season.
Speaking of other people taking a breather, Xander continues to apparently just not show up for work anymore.
Why isn't he working? we don't really
Bobby's working in this episode.
Yeah. And also, I want to know what you think, Kara, as we go through, what you think of Buffy's teaching style, her mentorship.
You want to hear my opinions?
I usually don't.
I've never shared my opinions on the podcast before. This is going to be new territory for us.
I know. Usually I'm like, Kara, shut up. This is for me to talk. You're my hype person. All you do is go, yeah, as I rant about various things.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, Buffy's little school for Slayers. I've got a couple of thoughts about it as we go through about whether or not she's being effective or not. So I can't wait to get into it. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
God, I feel drunk. I feel so fucking loopy. Okay.
I've never been drunk, so I don't know what that feels like.
It feels like you're watching a Buffy episode and then talking about it at like 10 p.m. at night. So, Rona and Vi. Those are the two potentials, let's not forget. They are wandering one of the cemeteries, carrying stakes and looking super nervous. Suddenly, Spike jumps out at them. He's got his vamp face on, and he attacks them, and Rona gets knocked to the ground. He grabs Vi from behind, and he goes to bite her. She screams, and he stops, and he unvamps his face, and he's like, okay, these two are dead. Why? Rona says, because the black chick always gets it first. And fair. Yeah. And Buffy is watching to the side with Molly and Kennedy, and she's like, what was that? And Rona says, I'm dead because he's a vampire. I don't have Slayer strength, Slayer speed. It wasn't a fair fight. P.S. Kara, where's Chloe? Where's our Lizzie McGuire babe?
Good question. Maybe she's on dinner duty tonight.
She's on dishes.
Making quesadillas with Dawn.
All right. Spike says, Vi, do you think I care if it's a fair fight? Vi says, no, sir. You don't play by the rules, and I have learned a valuable lesson of some sort. Spike pulls on her arm. She's like, ow. Buffy says, okay, Spike. So he lets her go, and Buffy says, you don't have Slayer strength, but that doesn't mean you're not strong. You have inherent abilities that others don't have. Molly's like, not like you do. And Buffy says, no, not yet, but it's there. You have the potential. You have strength, speed, instinct. You just have to learn to trust yourself. Rona, what did your instincts tell you to do just then? And Rona's like, to block his attack, keep him off balance, gain the advantage. And Buffy's like, no, you didn't. And Rona's like, they told me to run. And Vi agrees with her. She says, they're still telling me to run. And Buffy says, don't fight on his terms. If your gut is telling you to run, run. Regain the higher ground, make your fight your own. Spike, what did your instincts tell you to do just then? And Spike says, hunt, kill. And Buffy's like, come at me full speed. She tells the potentials, he needs to kill to live. That tells you everything you need to know. So Spike actually like leaps at her, and she ducks, and he hits his head on a coffin.
Love it.
It's hilarious. She gets on top of him with the stake, and she says, instinct, understand his but trust yours. You were chosen for a reason. Spike winces because she's like on his chest and says a couple of his ribs weren't set right. So, like, he had broken ribs, I guess, from his time with the vampire with a Y.
How awful. Feels so bad for him.
Yeah, that's really, really sad. So, Buffy, because she's still on top of him, she, like, is like, oh, are you hurt? Oh, and she tries to, like, lift up his shirt to see his ribs. And he holds her hand, and they, like, have a moment as he pulls his shirt down. And the girls are all watching this, and Rona's like, that's hot. And Molly says, we're supposed to like make out with him or something. And Vi says, careful, Buffy, just when you think this part of the lesson, he'll hurt your arm. So Buffy gets off him and helps him up, and then she's like, okay, Molly and Kennedy, you're next for the next like lesson. And she glances nervously at Spike. Cut to credits. So just a fair warning, everybody, I got an epic rant coming your way, not this scene. Very soon. But what I want to say here, what I want to give to you listeners is I do see the chemistry between Buffy and Spike in this episode. And I've seen it before. Like, obviously they have like two actors are really good at doing what they do. They got good chemistry. In this particular episode, that sexual tension is there. There's a whole build up here. Clearly, Buffy struggles the entire episode with what she's feeling. And you know what this reminded me of, though? It reminded me of Buffy and Angel in season 3, when Angel comes back from hell and Buffy and him are like, you know, dancing around each other, innocent little touches that like mean a lot more than they do. The Tai Chi.
Topless Tai Chi.
Yeah, exactly. So these touches, these awkward sexual moments, this is all repeated, right? Like, we've seen this happen before with a different vampire with a soul.
Do you think that when she touched him, she got a finger touch flashback?
I mean, no, because we would have seen it. We're privy to those.
So my question here is, so are we just establishing now that Spike's chip just does not work anymore? Like,
yes.
What's going on?
I think, yeah, you're right. Like, I would assume that it just stopped working. Like, he's just a free agent now that he, and it's good because he's got a soul and now he can, he's okay. Yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge, yeah, I see the sexual tension here. I see what's happening. I don't like it. And you'll hear all about it in a little bit. But I also just cannot help but be like, we've already seen this. We've already seen Buffy play tension tennis with a vampire with a soul. And Spike is even kind of acting like Angel now. Like, he's not like this old snarky Spike self. Like, he's the dutiful boyfriend who's just there to help Buffy train other people, you know? Like, it's just, it's very strange, the repeatingness of this.
Yeah.
The potentials are in the basement having chats, and Buffy has had enough of their chats. So she throws an axe into a bullseye behind them. She says, "You're all gonna die." And then they're like, "What?" And she says, "But you knew that already. That's the cool reward for being human. The big dessert at the end of the meal. Don't kid yourselves, you guys. This whole thing is all about death. You think you're different because you might be the next Slayer? Death is what a Slayer breathes, what a Slayer dreams about when she sleeps. Death is what a Slayer lives." And then she says, "Death is your gift." Except she doesn't say that, but that's what I'm getting.
She has come a long way since season 5, where it took her a very long time. It took her fellow podcast host Cougar showing her the way, but eventually Buffy has finally understood that death is her gift,
right? She's lived it. So she says, "My death could be the next Slayer." And I was like, could it? Like, didn't we talk about this before? It doesn't make any sense. Faith's death would be the next one, you know, unless someone was called in season 6 that we don't know about. There's a third Slayer wandering the world.
I mean, that is possible, but I don't know if I've said this on the podcast. I think I said this in the Discord. If you could kill a Slayer and then bring her back and then kill her again and trigger yet another Slayer, right? You'd be multiplying Slayers upon Slayers. That's a really good way to build a Slayer army. So if that were possible, there's a non-zero chance that the Watchers Council would already have done that. They would just have a Slayer imprisoned, and they would just repeatedly, you know, drown her or whatever, and then bring her back, and then drown her, and then bring her back. And every time they did that, that, you know, another potential would get called, which I understand is super dark and disturbing, but that's Buffy for you.
But they don't seem to do that.
I think the fact that they haven't done that is evidence that it's not possible.
Exactly. So Buffy, your facts aren't right here. The girls are watching this, and Buffy says, "Oh, goody, rapt attention. I love that so much. If we go with what Anya's resources are telling us, the first is in remission for a while, which we think means advantage for us. He or it was putting a lot of stock in that Uber Vamp thing, the Chaka Khan." And Danielle has been watching this from the stairs, and she says, "Tira Khan." And Buffy ignores her and says, "So when I kicked its ass, the whole first circus decided to back off for a little while. Good news, we probably don't have to worry about it pulling Spike's strings for a while. Here's the half empty. Time away means time to regroup. And part of that regrouping is coming back stronger than ever. The odds are against us. Time is against us. Some of us will die in this battle. Decide now that it's not going to be you. I know you're all tired, far away from home, anxious, but you're all special. Most people in this world have no idea why they're here or what they want to do. You do." And we cut to Dawn, who's looking pretty sad on the stairs, feeling left out. Buffy says, "You have a mission, a reason for being here. You're not here by chance. You're here because you are the chosen ones." And as she goes upstairs, she's like, "Dawn, you better hurry up and eat something so you're not late for school."
See, so this is why I really enjoy this episode, because when you think about it, the whole conceit of a chosen one is a very unfair, it's an inequitable system, right? And if we want to tell stories about better worlds, well, a better world is not one where an accident of birth makes you more special or better than other people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when I read fantasy novels where the magic system is something that is inherent, it's an ability somebody has, rather than something that somebody can learn or gain somehow, that's uneven, that's unfair. And I'm not saying that those are bad systems, I'm not saying those are bad books, right? Like, obviously we enjoy Buffy, but I like that the series decided at some point to examine the idea of a chosen one and to use Dawn as the vehicle for that and show us how, well, yeah, actually, it is unfair that Buffy and Faith and these potentials are better in mm-hmm. some way than everybody else. And I think that this episode does a good job of showing us that being the chosen one is not the be all end all in the fight against evil.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
We're at school. Buffy is talking to Xander on the phone. We know it's Xander because of what she says, which is, Xander, you know, if you want a shower at my house, lock the door. Of course, they're curious.
Are they?
And, yeah, I'm like, you like, who would, if somebody's showering, would you just open the door?
I mean, if you thought it was like one of the other girls, maybe, right? If it was like a friend.
If you know it's Xander.
Maybe they didn't know it was Xander. What I think is that Xander.
Or is Buffy teasing Xander here?
Maybe. But what I think is that Xander, much like Spike, are like the two of them are little creepy peeping Toms back in the day. And not even that far, not even that long ago. I don't know why I'm saying that. Xander used to take peeks, remember? I'm not surprised that he's now paranoid that girls are trying to peek in on him because he's like, oh, I did that when I was their age. So
also, doesn't Xander have his own place? Just go back to your place to shower, Xander.
He is unemployed all of a sudden. He has nowhere to go. He probably already gave up his apartment.
Oh, dear. Oh, anyway. Okay. So Buffy's talking on the phone. She's done with Xander. Amanda shows up. Amanda, the bully girl. Yeah,
the terrifying bully from
I love her so much. So she goes to sit at Buffy's desk, and I wanted to pause here and just talk for a moment about a picture on Buffy's desk. It's in a red frame. You can't really see it very well, but one of our chosen ones, Destiny, sent us an email asking, who is this picture of? And sent us like an enlarged shot of the frame because it looks like some like white guy with like a little pointy like Van Dyke beard or something. Like he doesn't seem to be anybody we recognize.
It's so Pike.
You think it's Pike?
it's obviously Pike. The years weren't as nice to him as they actually are to Luke Perry. But Buffy's just remembering him because of the high school days, the good old days.
Okay, that's a really good idea. My suggestion was it could be one of those like placeholder photos that come with the frame, and Buffy just didn't bother replacing it.
She's like, I like this. Put it up there.
She's like, there's nobody I particularly feel more strongly about than placeholder guy.
Well, maybe they're, because we, you know, sometimes we talk about how things are happening on the day-to-day of Sunnydale that we just don't see. So maybe that was like something really impactful that happened. She saved this kid. And it was, he gave her this as a reminder.
It's a whole other boyfriend of Buffy's that we just don't talk Pike, about.
Right?
Anyway, so Amanda sits down and Buffy hasn't quite hung up the phone yet. Buffy's asking, is Giles back from Shanghai? Because he's picking up a girl named Chow Han. Giles is clearly out and about collecting new potentials.
Collecting girls. Sounds weird when you say it that way, but that's what he's doing.
That's why I didn't say it that way, Steph. But yes, he's picking up girls. Buffy's done with the conversation. Amanda sits down. Amanda says, do people ever think you're weird? I feel like people think I'm weird, so they pick on me. And I might be weird. One of the boys who picks on me. If a guy picks on you, is it weird to think he's cute? The last few times I've seen him, I wanted to, you know, pick on him extra.
I just want to ask real quick, Amanda. I'm Buffy all of a sudden. Is this the kid that you attacked in the school parking lot a couple of weeks ago?
Maybe.
Okay.
Love that first fight.
Just checking.
So Buffy says, uh-huh. And Amanda says, my mom says when a guy teases you, it means he likes you. And Buffy's very noncommittal. I think she's learning. Mm-hmm. She says, sometimes that's true. And Amanda says, is that weird? We're mean to each other and we like each other. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Buffy's like, oh, it depends. Sometimes that's how people relate, being mean to each other. Even mortal enemies. Then with the, and that leads to no good. Absolutely no good. And much confusion. And then it's over. So absolutely, seriously, definitely over. And that's confusing too. The over part, which it is. Over, so, baby? And Amanda's like, what?
She's so confused. And so are we. Okay. Okay, so Amanda says, right, her mom tells her, when a guy teases you, it means he likes you. Buffy says sometimes that's true, right? What I would have had Buffy say, were I to have written her words, what I would have had Buffy say to her was, yes, immature, insecure, often young boys sometimes tease when they like you because they don't know how to process their emotions and are unsure how to get your attention otherwise. Sometimes it can be harmless, but overall, it feeds an unhealthy connection between negativity and sexuality that will not suit you in the long run. When a girl complains that a boy is teasing her and we respond with, well, that just means he likes you, we're actually teaching her that mean or aggressive or unwanted behavior that doesn't make you feel good from another person is an acceptable way to show affection. And you're basically saying, you know, boys will be boys. Like, we should just put up with it because that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I literally was going to make the same rant, Steph. So yeah. Thank you.
Well, like allowing someone who is comfortable with humiliating you into your life can eventually turn into allowing someone who can actually harm you into your life. I would be like, Amanda, you got to be kinder to yourself than that. Okay. You got to respect yourself more. Don't date immature boys who don't know how to treat you properly. And I get why Buffy didn't say this, okay? Because Buffy is also quite young, right? And clearly, just based on this very episode, she is not in a position in her life to give this kind of advice yet, right? She hasn't learned this about her own life yet. But if I were the writers on the show, I would just have had her... Carl, like, I just want Buffy to have learned something from her situation last year, from her affair with Spike. If she had learned something, then this would have been the perfect opportunity for her to model that for Amanda, to model how women set the right boundaries for themselves so that they can feel safe and respected. Because just the reminder, everybody, Buffy did not feel safe or respected by Spike last season. And frankly, even some of this season, because remember in Beneath Me, when he brought up the rape and rubbed it in her face again. Yeah. And when he touched her and hype girl, when he touched her and she flinched away from him. So I just, Kara, this is my rant. I just feel so deeply uncomfortable. And I have been feeling uncomfortable for the last 12 episodes because the writers are what they're doing with Buffy and her attitude toward this relationship with Spike, this thing, the situationship with Spike, the way that right now she's stuttering over her feelings, right? She's like, oh, we broke up, but is it over? Is it over? Like giving her this confusion about it, giving her this oversimplification of their situationship, it's really, really irresponsible. And it bothers me. It bothers me. It makes me uncomfortable. That's why I rant about it at almost every episode, because at the end of the day, Buffy, you weren't just mean to each other, you and Spike. You weren't just mean to each other. He abused you and you used him for his body. And it was not anything emotional. So when they suggest that there's an emotional hold on her now because he came back with a soul is very, very laughable to me. The fact that Buffy says it's absolutely, seriously, definitely over, but that's confusing too, the over part. Buffy, it was over. It was over in As You Were. You went to him and you ended it. And I'm so mad at the writers for taking that moment away from Buffy. Do you remember, Carl, when we watched As You Were? And Ryan was with us in that episode and she came in with that beautiful purple shirt and she had conviction. She had agency. Finally, she said, I'm taking control of my life. This is over. It's not good for me. It's toxic. And she walked into the light after that. So to have Buffy now sitting here and being like, is it over? Oh, I'm confused. Like, what do I do with this? Like, I don't like it. They took that moment from us and all for the sake of some weird love story that they're trying to roll out here with the sexual tension and with the feelings and everything. And I like, obviously we're halfway through the season. This is the direction it's been going since Spike showed back up in Sunnydale. But I'm registering how uncomfortable it makes me feel and why I think it's just overall sloppy writing on behalf of Buffy. For Spike, great. He's going to look really great at the end of all this. But what about Buffy?
No, exactly. Yeah. No, you said it really well. And from my perspective here, I just think, like, this is why child youth workers here in Ontario, school psychologists, school counselors, like people who work with youths in a non-educational capacity within the education system, you know, or non-curriculum capacity, I should say, they are formally trained and usually certified in with some kind of professional designation. And it's not because you can't do those jobs without that certification and training, but it's because, you know, maybe principals shouldn't be hiring 22, 23-year-old women who are still young and still navigating and unpacking the relationships that they've recently come out of or been in that have, you know, been harmful. And this is not on Buffy. Like you said, it's not Buffy's fault here. And we're not trying to put that blame on Buffy. But, you know, as much as she is trying and helping the students of Sunnydale High in certain ways, she's not really qualified to be doing this job. And as you pointed out, she may not always give, you know, the best advice in this case. And I think it's important for us to shout out and acknowledge the years of experience and school and practice that goes into, you know, obtaining that professional certification, whether it's social worker, psychologist, counselor, right? Like whatever that designation is, people work hard to attain it because it takes training and experience and patience beyond, well, I was in high school a few years ago, to help young people through these very normal changes in their lives. So shout out to everybody in a school who's not a teacher, who still helps kids because they've worked hard to learn how to do that properly.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, no shade to Buffy. She's doing her best here. I really want to blame the writers for this backtracking, because what a powerful moment this should have been for Buffy to be like, actually, I do know what it feels like to have a boy be mean to me because he likes me. And you know what? You're better than that. And that would have been perfect instead of her rambling on and being stuttery and being like, what does this all mean? You know? Okay. So Xander is fighting with all the potentials about something. I think they broke. I actually didn't catch it. I think they broke something in the living room. And Andrew's there too. Andrew shouts, why do we all have to yell?
Yeah, it's never really resolved, like, what actually happened. You know, Buffy comes in and then they just immediately leave and go to their other things. But I think that's the point, right, is we're starting to see how challenging it is for this house to accommodate so many people. Plus,
yeah, potentially it could have been that the shower. Oh, potential. I know. So Buffy is like, I'm only gone for a couple hours. But then Willow comes in and says, I've got news. And then Kara, I think they waited a couple hours before she gave them the news. Because when they're sitting at the dining room table, it's nighttime. So Will is telling them that a seer has located another potential slayer here in Sunnydale, someone who's already living here. And Xander says they couldn't find out a name or an address. And I just low-key had to agree with Xander because I'm thinking back to last episode with Eve, a.k.a. Sookie Stackhouse, who ended up being the first. Remember, the seer called Willow and was like, there's another slayer in town waiting at a motel. And she gave her the actual address for the motel. But, like, the seer didn't know 2 days afterwards that she was already dead. You know what I mean? Like, so what kind of information do these seers get? I mean, the powers that be send Cordelia way more specific information. It's not even that specific. It's just like visions, you know?
I mean, is that technically spoilers? Did she have visions last time we were in?
You know what, everybody? Tune in to our coverage of Angel at the end of this year to find out what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah.
So, wait. Was Doyle already dead when we covered Sanctuary? Yes.
Yes.
Look, she didn't get a vision at that point, probably, in that episode.
We're too tired to care about this right now.
You know what, you guys? Cordelia's up to some shenanigans over in LA, okay? So Buffy was going to bring the potentials out for a show and tell, but now she maybe not. Andrew's like, oh, but they're so excited. You're gonna break their little hearts. Kara, what the fuck is Andrew doing here? What is he doing here?
I literally have the same note in my notes. Why is Andrew included in the inner council? Which, by the way, I love how there's an inner council, right? It's like, okay, like, yeah, all the potentials are around, but they're not involved in these decisions, right? It's the adults leave.
Yes.
And Buffy and Xander and Anya and Willow sit down and talk. Yeah, so for the camera to kind of just be like, and Andrew's here, it's like, wait, what? He doesn't deserve this.
And he gets, like, he says stuff in the meeting and no one shuts him up. They're just like, yeah, of course, Andrew, of course. Like, he's just one of the Scoobies. He just became one, just like that. It's weird. Also, I'll add that the Scoobies, that the potentials are all, like, literally in the kitchen. Like, they could be eavesdropping so easily. So, like, why even? Anyway, Buffy says she doesn't want to risk the bringers finding the girl first. And Willow says she can do a spell to find her that night. And Buffy shouldn't skip the training because it's too important. And Dawn is standing by the door and she just says, you guys have more important things to do. And Buffy agrees and Dawn just looks kind of sad. And Andrew wants to go. Buffy's like, no. The potentials are in the kitchen playing with weapons. And Dawn comes in, kind of scolds them a little bit. I think it's a little bit of like, you know, you shouldn't play with weapons in here. Just kind of making it like a them versus Dawn kind of situation. And Rona is saying, you got to go with a steak. It's classic. I like the feel of wood in my hands. And then Kennedy comes over and says, lost me there, because Kara, Kennedy is gay or not into penis, clearly. So Dawn says, you guys are going to go on your little group patrol. And Vi says, more than that, it's an outing. And Kennedy says, we might actually get to kill things. And Dawn's like, I've killed things sometimes. But then her information or her story gets cut off because Buffy and Andrew are coming in. And Andrew's begging Buffy to go on this outing. And again, Andrew, to what right would you have to go on this outing? Like, what? Like, why are you even here? Vi says he doesn't seem evil, and Buffy says he's not evil, but when he gets close to it, he picks up a flavor like a mushroom or something. And Andrew gets really nerdy about Dragon Ball Z for a second, then he says it's not fair, Spike killed people and he gets to go. And Buffy says, Spike didn't have free will, you did. Andrew says, I hate my free will. Spike comes in, they all leave as a group. Andrew and Dawn are left behind. They watch them go sadly. Andrew asks Dawn if she wants to play Dragon Ball Z. My question is, Kara, why can't Dawn go? What difference does it make? She's exactly the same as the potentials at this point, probably even more trained.
Well, in the first scene, Buffy seems to suggest potentials do have some kind of leg up. They don't have enhanced like super strength, but they have instincts or potential. So it could be the case that Dawn, you know, wouldn't be able to hold her own. But I think in general, you are correct, Steph. I think it's a case of, you know, Buffy is seeing Dawn as separate from the potentials.
Mm-hmm. Dawn's a key. Like, Dawn opens things. She's got some power. Let's not. But also, we're forgetting that Dawn is the most powerful Wicca in the world.
Again, I think Andrew propositioning Dawn here, right? It's like, she did say she'd kill you in the last episode, Andrew. Like,
epically.
So now we're in the dining room. Willow's getting her ingredients ready. Dawn and Andrew are helping. We get a moment that hints at the animosity that exists between Andrew and Willow. And Dawn asks if this girl, this potential, goes to Sunnydale High. Willow says, probably. She's got to be about that age. So Dawn says, well, it could be that Glamazon in gym class, or my lab partner, Margo the Freak. Wow, Dawn. Judgy much?
I bet Margo's so normal.
Maybe it's Kit, you know? Like,
oh, shit, yeah.
And then Dawn says, I hope not, because she totally fainted right in the middle of our fetal pig dissection. And then Andrew says, killing pigs is so wrong and also hard.
As much as I'm like, Andrew, what the fuck are you doing here? He brings comic relief. Like, he's that's pretty funny to say.
So Willow says, we'll know soon enough. Somebody's life is about to change. The spell will conjure up a brilliant light and the light will find the potential and illuminate them with a glowing aura. So Willow's like, okay, so, you know, light show will track the location on a map, right? This is like half of Willow's spell repertoire is glowy O lights and then tracking things on maps.
That's the only thing she can do without turning evil.
But like half the time the map burns and damages the carpet, or you get red dust all over the carpet. Like,
you know, it only catches fire and burns the carpet when it's on his carpet.
It's only when Willow doesn't orgasm, right? Like, yes. If you come, then the energy goes somewhere. But if you don't, right, then it lights the map on fire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's how magic with a K works. Everyone knows that.
So, some time goes by. What time is it? We don't know. We don't care. It's Buffy.
We care a little bit. we care a little bit.
I'm too tired to care at this point. Willow's doing the spell. Dawn, Anya, and Xander are in the room. Andrew's somewhere. We don't know. Again, we don't care. Part of the spell involves throwing an egg in the fire. Cool. And they all start choking on the nasty smell. And then the light starts shining in the middle of the room. And Willow isn't sure how that's supposed to work. Anya says, "You messed up the spell again. At least it smells otherworldly." And Willow looks at Anya, and Anya says, "Oh, look, pretty." And Willow just starts saying that, you know, she sucks, she's sorry, like she's really getting down on herself. She's like, "Maybe we can look on the computer." Yeah, just Google potentials in Sunnydale.
Well, Buffy Googled evil.
Looking for girls in Sunnydale. It's going to work great.
That's what Giles does. Looking for girls around the world, though.
You should just contact Hank fucking Summers. He knows how to get girls around the world.
Jesus Christ. It's hitting us. We're hitting it. We're hitting our mid-episode fatigue.
So, Dawn goes to the door to open it to, like, let air in, circulate because of the smell. And suddenly there's a whooshing sound, and the light...
Make the sound.
...flies over... You're so demanding tonight.
You know who I feel like? I feel like in season 3 when Giles was eating that banana. Like, that's the attitude today. That's the energy we've got going on.
Suddenly, there's a whoosh.
Ooh, good one.
And the light flies onto Dawn, making her effulgent. And she hits the door. And I see you also wrote in your notes that she was effulgent. I'm glad we agree. Willow says, "I think it worked." And the light goes away, and Dawn gets up from the floor and says, "Maybe you did it wrong? Was it ambiguous in any way? Did you say potential sailors? Because I do like the water." And Willow says, "No, I did it right." And Xander says, "You're a potential. You could be the next Slayer." Anya says, "One second, you're this klutzy teenager with fake memories and history of kleptomania. And suddenly, you're a hero with a much abbreviated lifespan." Oh, Anya, never change.
She never let go of the kleptomania either, because she stole from Anya, right?
Xander says, "This is huge." And Dawn starts pacing, and Willow says, "Makes sense, I guess. Remember that thing about how they share the same blood or whatever?" Or whatever, Willow. It was only the key plot point at the end of season 5. Hello? You can everybody hear me pushing my glasses up right now to nerd check Willow?
That is such a funny really? Line. And then Anya, when she's like, "Yeah, I never got that." Like, so funny.
It is funny, except that that part of the show actually makes sense. Like, I get that.
There are so many things in the show, you guys, that don't make sense. You and I pointed out in this very episode, we're like, this Buffy dies and another's called again? Like, we don't know. But one thing is for sure, Summer's blood saved the day.
Dawn says, "She has to die. If I were the Slayer, it would mean she died." No, no. Dawn, it would mean Faith.
No. Everyone
You're all so confused. Stupid.
Everyone's so stupid. Why is it so hard to understand?
Where's it's Giles not... when you need him to explain Slayer lore to you?
Giles? He fucking left because he needed a break. He's like, "I hate it here so much. Dawn annoys me so much. I'm going to go to fucking Shanghai. I can't just put her on a plane and pick her up at the airport. I'm going to go there and get her. I'll see you guys in 72 hours.
So, can you imagine the conversation, like the phone call with Giles telling him that Dawn is a potential?
He'd be like, "That doesn't fucking make sense. I hate Dawn."
You'd be like, "Oh dear.
She has the potential for being a pain in my ass." He's like, "Okay, Wesley can be her watcher."
Then Anya says, "It's a lot like being the Pope in that way, except you don't have to be some old Catholic."
I saw the Pope. Did I tell you that?
No.
When I went to Italy for my honeymoon, Seb and I wandered into that area. And I was like, I think that's the Vatican when we were in Rome. And we went in there and it happened to be Sunday at like 12 o'clock. And I guess the Pope is always talking to the people at that time. So he popped his head out of the window and we were all like, oh, hey. So I saw him.
Did he wave at you?
No, he waved at me specifically. And then he said, repent. And I was like, hey, Pope. Then we went to go get some pasta.
So Willow says, we need to call Buffy. She'll be excited. And Xander says, she didn't bring her cell phone. And Dawn says, sure, because all the important people are with her. Xander says, you're important now. Oof. Excuse you, Xander.
That's such a weird phrase, you know. Now you're important. Before you were trash.
Dawn says, what happens now? I need to know what happens to my life. And Willow says, Buffy trains you. Dawn says, I train with the other potentials. Learn to do the stuff they're learning. Dawn's really slow on the uptake right now.
She's in shock. We'll give it to her. We'll say she's processing. She's in shock.
I retract. I apologize, Dawn. I'm being mean now. Anya says, we need to protect you from the eyeless guys with the sharp, sharp knives. The bringers. And Willis, or as people in our Discord said, the newest white boy gang in Sunnydale.
People in our Discord are so fucking funny.
Willow says, it's okay, we'll protect you. And Dawn says, well, what if they saw the spell? We did a big, orange, powerful spell. What if they sensed it? And what if they're on their way? And Anya says, I don't think they're seeing anything. Because they don't have eyes, right? So Andrew chooses that moment to wander in, asking the most important question of the day, are they going to replace the microwave that Dawn ruined?
Yeah. Are they going to replace any of the electronics? How about that? Television?
He says he wants to make popcorn, to which I say, make it on the stove, Andrew. Better.
Andrew, on the stove is fresher and crisper.
So true. So he's like, what's going on? And Anya says, oh, Don's going to be a slayer. And Andrew says, holy crap, plucked from ordinary life, handed a destiny? Xander says, say Skywalker and I smack you. And Andrew says, does Buffy know? Xander says, she didn't bring her phone. Andrew says, ugh. Incommunicado. And Dawn doesn't want to tell Buffy, not right away. She says, when Mom appeared to me, she said something about Buffy, and I'm thinking, I'm just not so sure Buffy will be happy for me. And Willow says, oh, she will. And Dawn says, will she? I'm not even sure I'm happy for me. Everything's different for me now. Anya says, that's because you're part of something larger, like being swallowed by something larger. Anya is killing it in this scene, Steph.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I was going to zero in on what Dawn said right there, where she's like, will she be happy for me? Because I don't think she would be. But I think later in the conversation, we'll see. Xander actually kind of covers that for me, which is a horrifying sentence.
So Dawn says, this is too much for my head. So she runs upstairs to her room. She tells herself to get out, get out, get out. Xander, she wants the idea to get out of her head.
Oh, okay.
Xander chastises Anya, and Anya says, ah, oh, it's a mixed bag. If she gets to be the Slayer, then her life is short and brutal. And if she does it, then it smells of unfilled potential. My swallowed analogy looks pretty sweet right now, doesn't it? Willow says, it's not like that. She's part of this huge power. I know what that feels like. It feels wonderful. And Andrew says, yes, Willow captured it. It's sort of like this metaphor for womanhood, isn't it? Sort of flowering that happens when a girl realizes that she's part of a fertile heritage stretching back to Eve. And Xander changes his tune and says, I'll pay you to talk about Star Wars again. And Anya says, this isn't about womanly power. It's about the fact that Dawn just might have bought herself an early death. So, of course, what's Dunita doing? She's dropping them eaves.
Oh,
she didn't go up to her room at all.
You guys are like, come on. It's been
amateurs.
3 years, right? It's been 3 years. You think she's not going to be eavesdropping on you? She is, all right? She's been eavesdropping this whole episode.
So Willow says, we don't know that. And Xander says, all we know is that everything just changed. And Willow wants to tell Buffy. She says they don't know if the ghost that Dawn saw was actually Joyce. And we don't know what Joyce meant about Buffy. So Xander says, well, what do you think Buffy is going to do with this information? Jump up and down? Teach Dawn the secret handshake? She knows what this means. Anya says, short, brutal life. She's so excited. Sharp, sharp knives. We've covered this. And Xander says, is that what Buffy wants for Dawn? Dawn doesn't want us telling her yet. And Willow says, Tawn's freaking out. Her input, not worth that much. That's right, Willow. Once again, consent, not Willow's favorite thing. Respecting other people's agency, not Willow's favorite thing. Willow's just like, fuck Dawn, I'm going to do what I want. And Anya says, she's a child. Of course she can't handle this. Which, again, Anya's killing this scene. And to be totally fair to Anya here, this has been Anya's thing consistently.
This is consistent. Oh, my God. Yeah. And like in season 5, when we first met Dawn, she was just like treating Dawn like she was like a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed except she, in her mind, she's now 7.
When actually she's like, what, 3?
Well, whoa.
2?
2.5? Yeah. Actually, Anya is the most correct out of everybody here.
I think it's so fascinating that everybody's like, oh, Dawn has a destiny now. It's like, well, she had a destiny before. It's just, it also sucked because it was to be sacrificed.
Yes, you guys are completely forgetting about her first destiny.
She used to be special, and then she wasn't special, and now she's special again.
Like, right? It's exciting. Woo!
So Xander says, well, something out there said that she can handle this and a hell of a lot more. Something out there chose her. And Dawn is looking in her mirror and says to herself, I'm chosen. And Willow is saying, can she handle it? Is that why she's hiding in her room right now? Oh, harsh, Willow.
Willow, what is this?
What and is Xander this? Says, she's getting used to it. We shouldn't rush her. Anya agrees, saying, it will only get her killed. And that's when Dawn sneaks out of her room because she's so good at sneaking around like a bad girl.
Let's also acknowledge the growth that we see in Dawn from season 5, because last time she did this, she lit a fire first and then took off.
This is true. There was no fire. She's not burning anything.
Good for Dawn.
So what I think is interesting about this scene is how each of the Scoobies is reading into what's happening from their perspective, right? So Anya is like, this is bad. It's going to be brutal. You know, Dawn's going to suffer because that's her experience of the supernatural world as a vengeance demon, often inflicting that suffering. And then Willow is like, no, it's like being connected to a higher feminine power, right? Girl power, Wicca power, because that's her experience. But she's also very troubled because she knows what it's like to feel that connection. She says it's great. But then at the end of the scene, right, she's like, can Dawn handle this? And really that's Willow reflecting on the fact that she couldn't handle the magics with a K.
Yeah. And then we have Xander coming in with all the defense of Dawn, because Xander, you'll find at the end of the episode, he has her back the whole time, right? He's always team Dawn because Dawn's most like him, right? I find it interesting, Willow's take on this. I like what you just said, that it's about the higher power part of it that she likes, but she's also very cautious. And I think it's very interesting that Willow is saying Dawn's not ready for this. Like, there's no way she can handle this kind of responsibility. When Willow was Dawn's age and Giles was telling her, you can't handle this kind of magic, Willow hated that, you know? So it's interesting how the world's kind of reversed there. But I also really like that Willow wants to tell Buffy. I think telling Buffy is the right thing to do. I know Xander's like, we want to respect Dawn's privacy, but Buffy's not Joyce. You know, Buffy is, it's not like Buffy is somebody who they have to keep in the dark, or that they step around gently, or that they have to be careful with what they say around her. Like, it's Buffy. She's the fucking Slayer. That's her sister. Obviously, Buffy should know. She should know right away.
Yeah, exactly.
So Buffy has taken the potentials to a demon bar, Kara. It's full of demons. And Vi says it's like a gay bar, only with demons. And it's not Willie's. Unless it is, and he's just gone.
Maybe Willie sold the place and got out of the business, and he's living his best life on an island somewhere.
One can only hope. A demon goes to greet Spike, and he's like happy that he brought some snacks, and Spike says, touch them and lose your privates. And then he scolds the Slayer, the potentials, for not blending in. And Rona says, rightfully, she says, we're a bunch of 15-year-old girls in a demon bar. How much blending do you think we're going to do? Touche. Buffy says, when you come to a place like this, you want to be seen. You want to scare someone or make contact. And Molly says, or have a strong drink. And Buffy's like, not usually that. And Kennedy says, you don't drink? Buffy's like, sure I do. Remember, Kara? Bleh. Buffy says, sure I do. I mean, no, that would be wrong. And Vi asks if they take cards, and the girls approach the bar. And Buffy's like, yeah, sure. Down all the yak urine shots or pig butt spritzers that you like. And her and Spike just grin at each other. And Spike says, with the prices they charge, just get human blood straight from the body. And the girls all look at him. He's like, I'm a vampire. So Buffy says, if you come here, it's because you have to wring information out of something large, scary, drunk, with room full of friends who don't care very much for the Slayer. Remember that. There's no one in here that wouldn't gladly rip your throat out. And that's when Clem approaches from behind. And he's like,
we've missed you, Clem. We were just talking about you. I'm so happy he's back.
He's like, Buffy, girl, how you been? And she's like, Clem, you look great. So toned. And they hug.
I love this because This is totally the friendship I think Buffy and Clem should have.
Yeah, I agree. And Kennedy's like, oh, he's ripping out her throat right now. So Clem starts chatting about his favorite TV show as Kennedy says, do you think she dated him too? And Buffy pulls him aside and says,
Buffy wishes. She's so not in Clem's league.
No, it's true. She could only be so lucky. So Buffy pulls Clem aside and then she introduces him to the girls and Clem's like, howdy. So you girls want to deal with demons, huh? Just let me tell you this. And they all kind of gather around him. And then we only see the back of his head, but something explodes like out of his head. Like obviously there's some sort of other demon face that he's not showing us. And Kara, I wish we could have seen it. I wish we could see what his real demon face was. The potentials all scream and Vi says, I could use a shot of that yak urine right about now. Here's where I want to ask you, Kara, about Buffy's little seminar here, her little Slayer school. What do you think about this? So she's obviously taking them on patrol with her. In this case, she takes them to a bar. Later, she's going to take them crib Robin. And then she's also obviously like trying to pull Spike's shirt off like while she's on top of him in front of them and flirting with this guy in front of them. So like, what do you think? What do you think of all her outings and plans?
I mean, it's like a gonzo method of teaching them, right? Taking them to the demon bar, kind of exposing them to the demon world. I love that she has Clem demonstrate his other face to them. I think that's a hilarious thing. So far, I think it's effective. The Spike stuff is a little disturbing. And again, that's, you know, Buffy lacks experience in some ways. She's blurring some professional boundaries here. But, I like that she's taking them into the field. I like that this is not just classroom textbook teaching.
Well, you notice the only thing that these girls disrespect about Buffy, or I mean, in some ways they could be looking up to her because she's just an older woman, right? Like an older sister almost that has something going on with some guy and they're interested in that, maybe. But I also think in a lot of ways, that's the only time they make fun of her. That's the only times that they undermine her. Like Kennedy, you know, like, oh, you think she dated him too? And like, okay, that's hot. Do we make out with him too? You know, like that's, they're not saying that in any other situation. They're only saying that about the way she's acting with Spike, which means probably that that is the most immature part of what she's doing. Donald is taking a walk, just walking all alone on the streets of Sunnydale. Oh no.
Because that's safe.
Don, you're being wild tonight. So she walks into Amanda and they both say that they're just walking. Amanda asks if Don's all right. Don's like, sure, just walking. That's when she notices that Amanda's head is bleeding. Like there's a scratch on her head. And Amanda says, I guess I have been a bit, it's been a bizarre night. I don't think you'd believe me. And Dawn's like, try me. Amanda says she was at the school late because of swing choir. Swing choir? That sounds so fun. What is this? I would love to be in swing choir. She says she tore her sweater, so she went home to the home science area to sew it up. And by the time she was finished, the place was empty, so it was all echoey and lonely. And then there was this guy or thing, and it scratched me, and I dodged it, and I hit it. It hit its head. And Don's like, what kind of thing? And Amanda says it has messed up in the face. Don says, when it scratched you, was it scratching with its teeth? Amanda says, was it real? Was it really a vampire? I bet you think I'm crazy. And Don's like, I believe you. Amanda says, well, cool. The thing is, after it hit its head, I freaked out. I trapped it in a room. It's still there. And I don't know what to do. I was thinking of getting your sister. And Don's like, you know something about my sister? Amanda says, I've heard people talking. A lot of them think that she's some kind of high functioning schizophrenic. But I also heard that maybe she could help with this kind of thing. Do you think we should get her? And Don's like, she's out. I can take this one.
Okay. I understand that we're not supposed to joke about mental illness and you know, being schizophrenic in particular is very serious. But I laughed so hard when Amanda said that. A, because Amanda's deadpan delivery is so good.
Yes.
Two,
her personality. Yeah.
Because I love whenever we get a glimpse of how normies view Buffy, right? I've loved it since the start of this series. the fact that everybody knows there's something wrong in Sunnydale to varying degrees. And everybody knows Buffy's involved in it in some way, but they either are willfully ignorant and don't want to know more, or they're just very confused. And so for Amanda to, you know, use that label and say, this is what some people are saying about your sister, it's so good. It's so good.
I mean, if I could, like, just off the top of my head, the things that people have assumed about her. So in this case, she's a high functioning schizophrenic, that she was super religious, that she was dating some really old guy. Remember, like, Owen thought that she was like a delinquent. So did Snyder. So like it's pretty funny what people think.
I mean, they were right, but yeah, for the wrong reasons. So we cut to the two of them breaking into Sunnydale High through a window. So now they're trespassing. They're bad girls. This is just Dawn's bad girls arc, but with Amanda instead of Faith.
This is the bad girls episode for this season.
So Amanda asks Dawn if she's spooked out, and she says, I'm all right. I can do this. It's mostly instinct, I think. Because Dawn, of course, is thinking this is my chance to be a potential, right? And so the window closes loudly behind them and they both jump. And then they start heading toward the classroom. And Amanda asks about vampire lore. And Dawn babbles a bit. And then they reach the door, which is still closed. And Dawn says, oh, he didn't break down the door. They're very strong. And they feel pain, but they don't hold back because of it. And Amanda says, I guess you're some sort of monster expert too. Dawn says, let's just say it runs in the family. So she opens the door and the classroom is empty. The vampire must have gotten out. Or did it? Because the camera pans back and the vampire is like wedged in between ceiling beads waiting to drop down on them.
Can we talk about this vampire?
Please, let's.
He's got like a do-rag on and he's got his leather outfit. It's clearly a white boy gang member. What was he doing in the school in the first place?
Why is he in the ceiling?
He was in home science, like he was in the sewing area. And then now he's just hanging on the ceiling. Was he really trapped in there?
Just go out the window, dude. This guy is determined. He's like, I'm going to wait here till somebody shows up.
You could wait there till sunrise, my friend. Like, he is the stupidest vampire, possibly, that we've ever met.
So Dawn says, we have to get out of here. And that's when the vampire drops down and Dawn and Amanda start to run. And they try the door, but it's locked. So the vampire approaches. Dawn uses her elbow to break the glass on the fire extinguisher cabinet. But she can't remember how to use a fire extinguisher, which, real.
fair enough. Actually, I actually think about this more than I should, or maybe it's good that I think about this much, but I'm literally like, if there's a fire in here, I don't even know where our extinguisher is. I have to ask Seb. If he's not home, I'd have to call him or text him.
You know what you should get is one of those fire blankets.
Oh, shit. You're right. I should get one of those.
Yeah, especially for the kitchen, because my boss's father is a retired fire chief, and apparently something he says is fire extinguishers do more harm than good because people get them. And full disclosure, I have one, but like people get fire extinguishers and they think they know what they're doing. They think they know how to put out a fire, and often they just end up making things worse. And in the time they spend trying to put out the fire with the fire extinguisher, they should have been calling the fire department and then getting the fuck out. So they end up causing more damage or making the fire worse. And you know, he's like, you should just not bother. Anyway, a little PSA about fire extinguishers. I'm sure they're great for fighting vampires, but I've never been able to test that theory. So
fire safety with Prophecy Girls.
We are not fire experts. Please do not take our
advice. We are not fire experts.
In the event of an emergency, call 911 or 999 or whatever your emergency number is and GTFO.
No, go to our Discord, message us in there, and we'll help you out with your fire needs.
But Steph, if somebody has a fire and loses all of their belongings in a fire, where could they go to replace it?
Might I suggest you go to prophecygirls.ca/store and get yourself a little Prophecy Girls merch outfit. All right. And we're talking sweatshirts, hoodies, same thing. crew shirts, t-shirts. There's even baby clothes in there. I saw
pillows, tote bags.
Yeah, it probably burnt up all your stickers. You want more stickers? Go
mugs.
Go there and get some. Yeah, anything you need to fill your house and your wardrobe, it's going to be there.
Yeah, and you know, we get a small percentage, and that will be the money to keep us quiet. We won't tell anybody you burned the house down for the insurance money. It's all good. No. Prophecygirls.ca/store.
Over on this podcast, money talks.
We aren't narcs. All right. So Dawn cannot operate fire extinguisher, so she throws it at the vampire, which, honestly,
nice.
Fine.
Nice. Nice.
It goes off. So they run away again, back up the stairs, because it's Sunnydale.
So meanwhile, Buffy is taking the potentials to a crypt now, and she's saying, vampire is an animal. Sometimes they run in packs, sometimes alone. Who could tell us where we are? And Rona says, it's a nest. And Kennedy says, only a vamp lives like this. Spike says, yeah, some. As a group, we're not known for our taste and decor, but in all fairness to the race, this place is seriously lacking in style. But he's like, he's got a point. Vampires can live anywhere, any way they want. Tastes, fashions, living conditions, they can vary. The animal inside, always the same.
Kids, don't make the mistake of stereotyping the vampire. Vampires can live anywhere. If you assume vampires always live in dingy and dusty crypts, that's discrimination and prejudice, and that is unfair. Vampires can have nice houses. Some of them live in dingy mansions and collect weird art. Just saying. What, you didn't think I was going to come for your boy, Angel?
No, I didn't. I'm just like, wait a second. Weird art? Who are we to say if it's weird or not, number one? Number two, dingy! It had a sky roof and a beautiful garden. You know what, Kara? Get your head in the game for when we go to LA, okay? I won't have this slander. I won't have it when we go over there. Except I will, because we'll probably make fun of so much. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Molly asks where Spike lived, and he says, crypt, actually. Nicer. A bit more, I don't know if posh is the right word, more like, and Buffy's like, comfy. And Kennedy's like, excuse me? When did you find it comfy? And Buffy's like, moving on. So again, like, Buffy, if you want these girls to respect you, you got to stop alluding to the fact that you used to bang this guy next to dumpsters and in his disgusting crypt. So she says, you want to stay alive, you have to spot and identify a nest on site. Look around for signs that last night maybe a dozen, two dozen vampires were right here where we are standing. And the girls start looking around, and Spike says to her, work. This little excursion was just in danger of being interesting. And Buffy's like, you know something, Spike? Interesting is not a problem. So Rona says, Buffy, I think we found something. And Molly says, it's a body. And Buffy comes over, she's like, it's not a body, it's leftovers. And the vampire rises.
Meanwhile, Dawn and Amanda are still running.
So slowly, might I add. Why is this vampire so slow?
They have to wait for Buffy's scene to finish.
That's true. They're just like, okay, no. Because like they're literally like just like half-ass jogging. And I was like, I'd be fucking sprinting. I'd be putting out all the burners in there.
Maybe the vampire behind them was like, I can't keep up. Can you slow down, please? And they're like, sorry.
This little sad vampire. He like decided to like crawl up on the roof again. And they're just like, are you going to stay up? Okay, we're just going to get a quick head start. We're just going to go.
So they go into the science lab and they barricade the door, your standard large cabinet, move it in front of the door. And the vampire starts trying to get in. So they sit against the barricade, and Amanda asks if Dawn thinks they're safe.
Buffy is facing the vampire in the crypt, and she starts saying her little spiel, but we get a lot of it as a voiceover for the rest of the scene. So Buffy says, no one is safe, not here, not ever. See this guy? He was dead a minute ago. Now he's the enemy. So she starts to fight him.
Dawn's telling Amanda that they're both going to get out of this alive. Do you believe in me? Because I've got a plan. So we've got like the contrasting philosophies here.
Yes. So Buffy is fighting the vampire, and she says, you can't think too much. Reacting is better. It could be the difference between staying alive and the other thing.
So no plan is what Buffy's saying.
Buffy's like, don't fucking plan anything. She fights, and Spike is holding back Kennedy, who wants to jump in and help.
Dawn's saying she's not sure her plan will work. Amanda says, your plan will work. Thanks, Amanda. Dawn says, I don't know what I'm doing here. And Amanda says, you're getting it done.
Thanks, Amanda.
I do like the supportive girl power energy here, right? Like,
yeah.
She's got Dawn's back. I like that. And this is when the vampire breaks the window, finally. And the girls run across the room.
You know what? I'm pretty sure this is the same room that Buffy had sex with RJ.
We don't have to talk about that.
Just saying. So Buffy is saying, the question is never, what do you think? It's always, what do you know? You gotta know. If you don't, you make one mistake. It takes just one vampire to kill you. So you gotta know you can take him. Know your environment, know what's around you, and know how to use it.
Wait a minute. This sounds like what Spike was saying in Fool for Love, where he's like, you know, you just need one bad day. They're just recycling season 5. Death is your gift.
Wait a second.
Vampires need only one bad day.
Is season 7 just a big fat recycle of the last Dawn is six special seasons? Again. Dawn special again. Buffy is having weird sexual tension with a vampire with a soul. That's season 3.
Dawn is throwing all of the chem lab equipment at the vampire, including something that burns him. So either the science lab has holy water or there's just really dangerous chemicals left on the tables.
He just left these chemicals just lying around for Dawn to help her attack this vampire. Or it's holy water, which both are very strange to just leave in a high school.
Or maybe because it's an American high school, maybe the science lab isn't actually used because they don't really teach science in American schools, right? I know Dawn said she was doing a fetal pig dissection. I don't believe her. All they do is teach religion, right? So maybe it's just this is the storage area.
True.
For what they used
then
to
then it is holy water.
Oh, good point. Yes. So Matt is standing by the wall and Dawn grabs a flag and after a few tries manages to break the flagpole into a stake. She attacks the vampire, but it falls to the ground and he gets on top of her.
So Buffy is saying, in the hands of a slayer, everything is a potential weapon if you know how to see it. When you're fighting, you have to know yourself, your brain, your body, know how to stay calm. Every move is important. Every blow's got to be part of the plan because Buffy, there was no plan. I'm confused. every blow is going to be part of your plan because if you make that one mistake, then it's over. You're not a slayer. You're not the potential. You're dead. So what do you know? See, now the only thing you know for sure, you got me. And that's when Buffy hits the vampire back, drops her stake, and her and Spike exit the crypt and shut the door. And the vampire advances on the potentials who are all holding their weapons and looking scared.
She drops the stake like a mic drop moment, right? Like yeah. She holds out her arm and then just lets the stake release, which I think is so powerful. Like, this is a power move. And you were asking my opinion on Buffy's teaching style. I fucking love this.
Yeah. I was surprised that she did this. I didn't remember. So like when she left them in there, I was like, oh, just like that? But honestly, I'm somebody who learns by doing it like this way too. Like just throw me in. And like that's the best way to learn sometimes, you know?
Buffy does not have time to coddle these potentials. She said that before. So if you run through a couple, I mean, we don't know what was going to happen. If they seriously got into trouble, would she have swooped in? Or would she have just let them die?
Hard to say. We know what Giles would do if he were there. So Willow, Anya, and Xander are outside Dawn's door and they realize that she snuck out. So they got to go find her because before the bringers do. And Willow says, I can do a locator spell, but we have to hurry and we have to find Buffy.
So Dawn is screaming for help from Amanda, who can't help. And then suddenly the bringers jump in and break the windows. Because they love breaking windows. It's kind of their thing.
They love to break windows so much. Especially the more windows to break, the better. But isn't this like the second floor or the third floor? Can they fly?
Maybe
like
they're
Buffy?
On a slope. I don't know what's going on.
Right? Do they have like staffs that like they run and then they
how
leap?
How did they know that Amanda and Dawn are there? Like
bringer magic. They're called the bringers. So
did they also do the effulgent light spell? Like.
They probably did.
So they go straight for Amanda and Dawn kicks the vampire off her and says, no, you don't want her. You want me.
Psych. They don't.
Yeah. One of the bringers says, psych. So they're about to stab Amanda to death because that's one of their other favorite things in addition to breaking windows. Dawn lights a giant fire.
How?
Spooks the bringers.
Just open gas in this chem lab.
I guess they heard the flame or felt the heat of the flame.
I think Dawn did enough research to know that the bringers' one true weakness, besides getting their neck snapped or getting stabbed by their own swords, is fire.
That's really a coincidence because I am also not immune to fire. Weird, right?
Are you trying to tell me that you're a bringer?
I guess, since they're the only thing vulnerable to fire. So Don and Amanda run to the hallway. They stop running for some reason, Steph says in her notes. And Don says to Amanda, listen to me. Remember when you said I was special? Well, I'm not. But the thing is, you are. This is your battle, Amanda. And Amanda's like, I can't. And Don says, you can. You've got to. Look, I've got your back, but this is something you have to do. It's something you were born to do. Here, this belongs to you. So Don gives Amanda the weapon that she fashioned out of the flagpole, and Xander runs up and catches that last bit. And then Buffy and Spike come up as well.
Whoa.
Just as the Bringers attack.
So fast.
And Amanda fights the vampire as Spike and Buffy fight the Bringers.
So we got to talk about this vampire again just for a second. What do you think he's thinking? Like, he is about to eat this little teenage girl. And then all these other men jump into the classroom, thwart him, and now all four of them are chasing the girl. Is he kind of like, hey, I tagged them. Like, I called dibs. Like, what? Save one for me.
Yeah, but where, like, how did Buffy and Spike and Xander know to find Dawn and Amanda here?
So Willow did the locator spell, so she knows that Dawn's there. The question is when. Timing with this show.
Buffy didn't have her cell phone, so did Buffy go back to the Summer's house first?
No, they would have maybe two locator spells.
Willow's very busy with these locator spells.
They're the only thing she can do, so that's why she does them as much as she can.
Anyway,
I think my confusion part is just when, because we're led to believe that Dawn is fighting this vampire at the same time Buffy's giving the speech, which is impossible.
Are you asking me what time it is?
Yeah, I am, which is impossible. So clearly Buffy and the Potentials went to the crypt a lot earlier, and then we're literally on their way to the school.
The crypt is behind the Sunnydale High property. Buffy and Spike were piecing out, and they saw the big fireball, and they're like, yeah, that's Dawn. Lighting things on fire again.
Yeah.
Xander and Willow were on their way at the same time.
Sure. Whatever.
So Amanda stakes the vampire. It's pretty cool. And Buffy approaches, and Amanda says, okay, one minute I'm in swing choir. The next, what's going on? You tell me to come to you with problems? Turns out a vampire attacked me? Problem. So I get to your house, only when I get there, this orange cloud hits me. And I love how worked up Amanda's getting. She has so much repressed anger, and I love it so much.
She's going to beat one of you up in the parking lot. Careful.
So Dawn says she was at the doorway. And Amanda says, I don't know if you're into drugs, but that's not my deal, all right? I love her so much. The cloud hit me, and I got a little dizzy and discombobulated. And Dawn says, it was Willow's spell. She's the potential slayer.
So that is when the scene ends, right? And I got a couple questions. My first one, though, is, so did they just leave all those Bringers' bodies in the school?
They did.
And then Principal Wood finds them, and he's like, more bodies to bury. He has to bring them out.
He's like, ooh. Goody, goody. He likes burying bodies.
Body he's goodness. Like,
I'm going to ruin another suit.
Diggy goodness. Yeah, he has to take care of that for sure. My other point here was, earlier we were talking about the potential slayers. Do they have the potential, right? Do they have skill sets that we don't know about? Well, watching Amanda very naturally outmaneuver this vampire and stake him with, like, she had like actual like karate moves that even Buffy didn't have in the first season of Buffy. I find that very interesting. I was like, okay, so clearly they do have some inherent ability that makes them a little bit more prone to slaying. I don't know. But I thought that was interesting. I'm like, has it always been the case? I guess we're finding out now.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we cut to the Potentials the next morning in the living room. They all survived. They survived this ordeal. They're all getting along, right? They're in a circle. They're living their battle story from the night before. It sounds like they all worked together to defeat the vampire, but at the same time, they all had a moment to shine. And they want to hear about Amanda, because Amanda's there now. And they want to hear about how she took out the vampire solo. And Amanda says, when the vampire attacked me, I felt this kind of charge. And Kennedy says, like, you realize in one instant that your whole life is different. And Amanda's like, exactly. It's that rush you're talking about. And Dawn has been what, Kara? What has Dawn been doing right now?
Dropping some eaves.
favorite hobby of Dawn's. What I will say about Dawn in this scene, though, because she's watching the girls talk, like she's, again, an outsider. The look that they've given her in this scene, it has to be on purpose. It reminded me so much of Buffy in the Body. She is wearing a red shirt. Her hair is pulled back. Her makeup is very subtle and it's very beautiful and glowy, and I love it. Very natural girl, but like she looks like Buffy looked in the Body. And I don't know if there's a significance to that. I couldn't help it. I was like, oh my God, that's Buffy's sister, you know?
That's a really interesting point. I was focusing more on how Amanda suddenly found her people, right? Like she strikes me as somebody who's a little bit of a loner, or a little bit more isolated in Sunnydale High. Like she was on swing choir, but like, as far as we knew, she didn't really have a ton of friends. And now she is automatically a part of this group and they accept her without question, right? In fact, she has slayed a vampire, which, you know, some of them haven't yet. And you can see the look on her face as she's kind of included. And like she says vampire instead of vamp. And they're like, no, vampire is okay. And she's all relieved, you know. And given our understanding of Amanda's fraught relationship with boys at this point, in addition to the layer that you've seen here of like Dawn's exclusion, there's also the message of the inclusion, right? Of being a part of, you know, this female circle and being welcomed in, you know, in this case, it's not about an intrinsic quality of womanhood, but it's like, okay, you're one of us, right? You are a potential, which is obviously what the episode's all about. And I think that's really interesting too.
Yeah, it's really nice to see. And like, I love, because the girls haven't like been fighting or anything throughout the episode or since we've met them really, but having that camaraderie, right? Like, because I think it's like, one of them was like, oh, I really loved what you did there. Like you were so brave. And then she's like, oh, I could only have done that because you did this. Right. And like, it's cute. It's really nice to see. So Buffy and Xander come up behind Dawn and Buffy asks Dawn if she's okay. She's like, yeah, I was just thinking of hitting the books, do some research on the first. It's in a retreat mode right now, but you're still going to need to know how to fight it. And Buffy's like, sounds good. And then she tells the potentials to come downstairs with her. So they all walk past Dawn. Amanda smiles at her as she goes downstairs. So again, as you're saying, Kara, this idea that Dawn has been removed again. So Amanda was her friend. The two of them went through this whole thing yesterday together, but Dawn doesn't get to be part of that group bonding because Dawn isn't one of them, even though she was also somebody who fought the vampire. Yeah. Do you actually agree? We didn't talk about it in the scene, but when Dawn turns to Amanda and says, it's your fight, I get why they put that in there to show Dawn like passing the torch with no problem. But I was also like, run. Like, is it up to her to fight these three bringers? I don't think so.
Well, they've tried running at this point. So I think Dawn's like, there's nowhere else to run. We've gone as far upstairs as we can go.
There's no more floors. Okay. And they all go downstairs. Dawn sits at to do some work. But Xander is still there. And he strikes up a conversation with her. He says, it's a hard gig being a potential. Just being picked out of the crowd, danger, destiny, plus if you act now, death. And Dawn says they can handle it. And Xander says, yeah, they're special, no doubt. The amazing thing is not one of them will ever know, not even Buffy. And Dawn's like, know what? Xander says, how much harder it is for the rest of us. 7 years, Dawn, working with the Slayer, seeing my friends get more and more powerful, a witch, a demon. Hell, I could fit Oz in my shaving kit, but come a full moon, he had a wolfy mojo not to be messed with. Powerful, all of them. And I'm the guy who fixes the windows. And Dawn's like, well, you had that sexy army training for a while. Just going to pause there right now for a second. No. Stop saying that. And then she says, the windows really did need fixing. And Xander says, I saw what you did last night. You thought you were all special, Miss Sunnydale 2003. And the minute you found out you weren't, you handed the crown to Amanda without a moment's pause. You gave her your power. And Dawn says, the power wasn't mine. And Xander says, they'll never know how tough it is, Dawny, to be the one who isn't chosen, to live so near to the spotlight and never step in it. But I know. I see more than anybody realizes because nobody's watching me. I saw you last night. I saw you working here today. You're not special. You're extraordinary. And Xander kisses her forehead. Dawn's almost crying. Dawn says, maybe that's your power, seeing, knowing. And Xander's like, maybe it is. Maybe I should get a cape. And Dawn's like, cape is good. Xander says, yeah. And he leaves. And Dawn kind of gathers herself, right? She doesn't let any tears fall, but her eyes were watery. And then she breathes deeply. And then she gets to work. And then we cut to credits.
Oh, I have mixed feelings about this scene. And I mean, I think it really comes down to the fact that, as we've said before in this podcast, you know, as we've rewatched Buffy over and over, I find that my patience for Xander gets thinner every time I watch. And when I was younger, I identified with his role, which he has spelled out so clearly for us here, right? He is the fifth business. He is, you know, the character who isn't special in any way. And the fact that he's not special is what makes him special. And certainly there were parts of my life when I was younger where I felt that way. But now, you know, we don't have to recap the seven seasons of Xander slander at this point, but I feel differently. And some of this scene, some of Xander's speech comes off as whining, right? He's like, oh, poor me. Look at how hard I have it because I don't have any superpowers. And it's like, well, Xander, firstly, whenever you've tried to have powers, it hasn't worked so well. Secondly, I don't know that you do have it too tough, right? Like, Buffy's the one who's going to have a brutal, nasty death, as Anya put it, right?
Buffy's already died twice.
Yes. And also had to kill her first boyfriend. Aww. You know, did you have to do that, Xander? No. You just left yours at the altar.
And cheated on your other one.
Right? Right? And then, it's kind of the whole thing where it's like, if there's a couple who's expecting a baby, the partner who isn't carrying the baby is like, but it's so hard. Like, I don't get to experience the miracle of life and pregnancy. And it's like, yeah, buddy. It's really hard that you're not the one who has the morning sickness and all the health concerns and, you know, physically carrying a child for 9 months, right? And all of that stuff, changing your body. Like, it's okay to reflect on the fact that you're missing out on a life experience, because not everybody can have every single experience that makes us human, right? Like, that's just not something that's possible. It's okay to reflect on that. It's okay to say, like, oh, I'm curious. Like, you know, I wish I could know what that's like. But that doesn't make your life harder, Xander. Your life isn't harder because you have to sit around and watch other people be killed by supernatural forces or have to, like, fight them more directly. Your life is not harder for that reason. Your life is different. And I think you feel a little sorry for yourself. And I think you still haven't really figured out your place. And I know the show is trying to pump Xander up as a hero, because that's what it always does. It's always, well, Xander's special because he's not special, like in Primeval. He was the heart. They needed him.
Like, and then, in of course, Grave?
Yes, at the end of season 6, Xander saves the world because he's ordinary and he just talks to Willow about Yellow Crayon. Did you hear his Yellow Crayon speech? It was pretty great. So there's a part of me that really wants this narrative to be accurate and true and to land the way the writers intend for it to land, because I think it's a good message. As I said near the start of this episode, the whole Chosen One trope is not actually that great. And I think it is nice to say that people who don't have powers are still special and can still, you know, contribute to the fight. I think that's great. I just don't like the messenger.
Yeah, I agree with you. What I will say for his speech here is that it does make Dawn feel better. It does make Dawn feel seen. And Dawn obviously shows the most bravery at the end of this episode by being like, this is where I can help. This is how I can help. And she sits down and does it. So in that regard, I do think that it's a good speech. It's a good thing for him to do to make her feel better. But I completely agree with you that the message coming from this messenger does not land the way it used to land with me. It doesn't land the way I think the show wants it to land. I see it. I totally see what you mean about it being whiny, about the whole, you know, woe is me. It's also a little condescending. And I am reminded of the scene in Two to Go where Dawn was placating, like in this scene, Dawn is placating him. But in Two to Go in season 6, Xander was feeling bad for himself and Dawn put him in his place. right? Don said, like, he was saying, like, oh, like, I can't even help Buffy or Willow do anything. I can't do anything. And remember, and Don told him, stop feeling sorry for yourself. Like, you know, like, we have to go back there and help. He's like, no, I can't do anything. And she actually put him in his place then, and she remained the more composed one out of the two. And I don't see that being that different from the speech either. Like, Don is, like, as I said, Don is placating him a little bit more here by, like, she says, right? No, no, like, they have to worry about this. And like, she says a couple things on Buffy's behalf, but, like, she lets Xander say it, and then she lets herself feel better from it, and I think that's fine. But at the end of the day, I think what she told him in Two to Go holds true right now, too, where it's just, like, you're just feeling bad for yourself. It just goes to show how much more mature Dawn is than Xander already, in my opinion. She's going to be more mature than him, like, with every passing day, if she keeps this up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, but you're absolutely right. I'm loving Dawn in this season. I know we made fun of her earlier because we love to make fun of people, but also,
yeah,
like,
because we're little Dawn bitches, is great. But yeah.
Xander, not so much. The end.
You know what, though? It's interesting. So I love Dawn this season. I think she's fantastic. She's actually terrific this season. And for the most part, Xander has been pretty good. You know, like, we have these moments with him where we're just like, that was good. That was a nice thing for him to do. But it's like what we said back when we were talking to Kayla and Brittany in Sleeper. Someone rewrote Xander this season. Someone came in and was like, let me take over Xander. And it's a completely different character. So for them to, like, all of a sudden be like, Xander's the all-seeing, all-knowing, wise seer of the Scoobies. It's not Giles anymore. It's now Xander. It's like, where did that come out of? Like, where? When?
Well, you see, Steph, when you leave somebody at the altar and then everybody just decides to forgive you within a week or so.
Right.
It changes you. It makes you wiser. It makes you more experienced.
I think on your 100th pass, when you reach that special level of passes in your life or things getting swept under the rug or forgiveness for the things that you've done, you just kind of ascend. And you become this all-knowing, all-seeing, wise old man. And that's what Xander has become, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Who's your hero?
There's a lot of potential heroes there in this potentials episode, right? Clem for just being Clem. Buffy Clem. For her teaching style. Principal Wood for cleaning up the reader files.
Principal Wood for his part-time job as Sunnydale's official body cleaner.
I'm gonna go with Amanda just because I'm just loving how she, like, delivers everything, right?
You guys kind of, like, look alike, you know? You kind of look like Amanda.
Thank you.
I picked Dawn. I picked Donatella, obviously. The last scene with her, Michelle Trachtenberg is a great little actress, you know? It really moved me when she just gathered herself, right? And she's just like, all right, back to work. Maybe that's the mother in me talking. It's just like, some days you're just having a shit day and you're just like, I'm doing it though, you know? Mm-hmm. I got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we've got some hot steaks.
We sure do. You guys really came through. We're not that we didn't have any hot steaks at the beginning of the season, but we had less so because we hadn't, you know, we weren't going. And now that we're in it, people are like, oh, I've got steaks for you. I've got so many steaks. And they just fucking keep coming.
Gradually catching up on the email. All right. First hot steak is from Alice, who says, now that you're going into season 7, I want to mention that Dawn is pretty badass and confident in this season.
True.
A magic Letterman jacket to make her feel that she is lesser to Buffy, Willow, and Anya. Then she bounces back and wholeheartedly supports the potentials. The speech that Xander gives her at the end of the episode Potential felt totally unnecessary. Dawn can help the gang with no powers, without summoning a musical demon, casting a love spell on all the women in Sunnydale, or falling asleep while on Oz duty. You go, Alice. Powers or no powers, Dawn is still more useful to the Scoobies than Xander.
Alice, the perfect accompaniment to what we were just talking about. Thank you. So Joe also wrote in about this episode, says, and Joe says, looking forward to season 7, my least favorite season, but I know you'll make it entertaining as hell. Joe says, I had a prematurely sent a hot steak back in September about the concept of potential slayers, specifically that the entire concept was pulled out of thin air and I felt gaslit into believing it was a thing the entire series. Would love to hear your thoughts on it. If the Watchers were training potential slayers this whole time, why was it never mentioned before? And why was there a constant running joke about how the Watchers are a bunch of slackers who would have nothing to do but watch Masterpiece Theater if Buffy didn't take them back? I get that there's always one Slayer in waiting, but was under the impression they got called and trained only once the active Slayer dies. Kendra seemed to be an anomaly whose people were able to identify her in advance, but always assumed that there was an exception rather than the rule. Did I miss something?
No, I don't think you missed something, Joe. We talked a little bit about this last episode. I think the text supports either reading. Right? Like, you could say it the way you said it, or we could look at it as the Watchers Council tries to identify potential slayers, does its best to start training them, doesn't always get all of them, including, you know, the next slayer. I think the whole thing about they'd have nothing to do but watch Masterpiece Theater if Buffy, you know, didn't play ball, that's a bit of hyperbole, right? I think it's clearly implied from the last couple of seasons that the Watchers Council has operations beyond just we're watching over the Slayer. They started as that, and now they've evolved beyond that. But Buffy breaking with the Council was a big deal because their control over the Slayer was what gave them authority in the supernatural world, because they're all humans. But the fact that they are the ones directing this supernatural force is what's so powerful about the Watchers Council. So for that force to rebel against them really cost them a lot of face.
And I'm going to go with the answer that season 7 is better known as the rewrite season, where they're just going to write whatever they feel like and don't care about what came before half the time. And then the other half the time, they're paying homage to what came before. It's very confusing.
And now we have Rebecca, who wants to talk about vampire psychotherapy from Conversations with Dead People. I almost wished Buffy would have spared him, so Holden could have continued his psychoanalysis. Let's aside his desperate urge to kill her. I had a feeling he was sincerely trying to help. For a new vampire, Holden seemed oddly empathic. Plus, since he's already dead and evil, contrary to former therapists of Buffy's, rest in peace, Mr. Platt, he might have a good chance of not being abruptly killed by another monster. Without any doubt, Buffy is on top of her game. Just think about her sad voice when she explains to Holden what's going to happen next. No, it's definitely what comes after the fighting that worries her. With Kendra being dead, and Faith being in jail, or, you know, beating up part-time soulless vampires, maybe. No one seems to be left at Buffy's side, who shares the same responsibility, the same emotional weight, the same unique perspective. Therefore, she can't reach out to a person she can truly connect and share this complex psychological experience with. I have a feeling, a certain feeling. It is no coincidence. The person she is able to open up to is, of all things, one of those she is supposed to kill because of being the Slayer.
Well said, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a fascinating take.
Mm-hmm. Our last hot stake is from Rach, who also writes in about Conversation with Dead People. And Rach says, Blue by Angie Hart is in the beginning of the episode was especially written for Buffy to talk about her past relationships. So a little behind the scenes tidbit there. I have no idea. I'm going to go and listen to the song and find out about Buffy's past relationships.
Nice. All right. And thank you to all of our Buy Me a Coffee supporters, especially our chosen ones.
Emma, Kyle, Destiny, Erica, Allison, Jace, Haley, Tasha, Ricky, Amy, Rochelle, Laura, and Bahia.
Holly, Kayla, Jordan, Julian, Nicola, Luis, Joshua, Susanna, Jasmine, Christy, Kimmy, Lauren, and Brad.
Thanks, everybody. We are halfway done. That's it. 12 more episodes to go. See you next week. Bye. Thanks for listening to Prophecy Girls. If you want and can afford to donate, head on over to buymeacoffee.com/prophecygirls for one-time and monthly options.
You can also visit prophecygirls.ca/store to view all of our merch and rep the podcast on a sweatshirt, mug, sticker, or more.
We appreciate all of your support, even if it's just spreading the word about us or enjoying our show week by week.
We also invite you to join in the discussion by messaging us on our social media channels.
Follow us at Prophecy Girls Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, and Prophecy_Girls on Twitter.
You can also email us at prophecygirlspodcast@gmail.com or visit our website, prophecygirls.ca, where you can find the link to our Discord.
Praise Moloch.
See you next week.